VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, a very special Saturday morning, Memorial Day weekend, proving that we are once again live in the studio, and not everybody will be, so if you want to get a little real interactive radio today, this is the place to be. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we will be here for the hour talking about everything we'd like to talk about. And everything you'd like to talk about, if you just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Callers will go, as always, to the head of the line. All of our regulars, thanks for tuning in again, especially on this holiday weekend when we have many things to be very grateful for, all those that went ahead of us and paved the way for us being free. And I know it's all supposed to be about the departed, but we also take advantage of this weekend to recognize and thanks the people who are currently serving in the military branches all over the place. So along with all the fun that we're going to have this weekend, all the food we're going to eat and all the beer we're going to drink and all that stuff, let's try to remember to reach out a little bit and thank somebody, perhaps in uniform or someone who was. Today, lots of stuff to do, lots of stuff to talk about. We will start, as always, with the market. And if you were listening at the end of the real estate show, they asked us from the other room, was it a good week in the market? And both Adam and I gave them thumbs up on that. But there's a but. And boy, yes. Is there a but on this thing. What it was and what it felt like, two different things.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the market was up. But I'm not really sure how.
Monday.
Yeah, it was up Monday, and then the rest of the week was slightly lower. The trading was very strange this week. There's a lot of uncertainty. A lot of it was political, a little bit financial. But, you know, it was just one of those weeks where when I went to go do the numbers this morning, I was kind of surprised that it was up instead of down. So
I had heard it on the news last night right before I started to study for the program today, and I looked at the numbers on the news, and they're all three green. Really?
Yeah, exactly.
That's not how it felt.
I know. So just this week, we saw the Korean summit canceled, then it was put back on again. Now maybe it's back on again. I'm not really sure what's going to happen with that, but we saw talks of tariffs on imported cars, something that I really don't believe will actually happen. The price of oil really collapsed on Friday from its recent highs. It was down more than 4% at one point on Friday. And despite all that, the market went up. So I think that this is a good sign. It says that despite all the noise, the U.S. economy is doing very well. Businesses are in great shape. And I think that the underlying currents are stronger than the political noise that you're hearing right now. Would you, is that an assessment you would agree with?
Absolutely. You know, people in D.C. should remember something that I learned a long time ago. It is very often smarter to keep your mouth shut and have people think you're stupid than to open it and remove all doubt.
Fair assessment. The NASDAQ managed to rise 1.1% this week, so pretty nice week there. The ETF QQQ, which tracks 100 of the best stocks in the NASDAQ, actually gained 1.35%, so not a bad week. It's now up over 9% in 2018. Not too bad. No. The S&P gained 0.3%, and the Dow gained 0.2% to come back in positive territory for the year. So all three indexes are positive now for the year again. They were 2 weeks ago, then last week the Dow slipped a little bit below. Now it's back up. Outside of the U.S., the markets did not look quite as good. Italy's market fell more than 4% this week. Spain fell almost 4%, and Brazil dropped more than 2.5% and brought its annual decline to almost 17%. The decline in Brazil is really dragging on emerging market ETFs this year as well, which outside of Brazil aren't really doing that bad, but Brazil is such a big factor.
They're doing very well.
Yeah. Brazil is such a big factor in the in a lot of those that it it's Brazil's making it look worse.
Brazil is such a weird place.
It is. It's boom or bust, it seems.
Boom or bust, exactly. Yeah.
The commodities index dropped this week, mainly due to oil's dramatic decline. The price of oil dropped more than 5% on the week. It's still positive on the year by almost 14%, but it was a big drop this week. Gold, silver, and natural gas all rose, with natural gas really pushing higher by more than 3%, a big rebound from where it was about a month ago. I didn't know where the natural gas downward spiral was going to end, but it appears to have.
It appears. I got my fingers crossed. I'm pretty heavily invested, as you know.
The bond market also traded higher this week, and long treasuries actually led the way, gaining over 2%. They're still down almost 5% this year, but it was good to see a little bit of positive light in the bond market, finally.
Yeah, rates actually took a nice little tumble on the long end.
Yeah. The economic data was once again strong, with almost every indicator beating expectations outside of housing. For some reason, home sales seems to have taken a breather in April, with both new and existing home sales missing their expectations.
There are reasons.
In addition, though, the FHFA house price index was expected to rise by 0.6% and instead rose by only 0.1%, which is a pretty big miss.
Which is kind of hard to explain, because one of the reasons existing home sales are down is because there's a shortage of inventory. You
Correct.
Would think that demand would bring prices up stronger.
You would think so, but a lot of that demand is on the less expensive
that
home
is true.
Side. So yep. That kind of jives with what we're saying.
And on the new part, you're not getting them built just yet. There was a lot of backup because there were bad weathers. Look what happened in New York alone.
Mm-hmm.
It was winter into April this year. So that's going to rebound very strongly this summer, in my opinion.
Well, the housing industry is also facing, it's got some headwinds and some tailwinds right now,
yep.
Which is interesting. On the positive side, demand is really strong due to almost full employment and a strong economy. But on the negative side, interest rates are higher than they've been in many years and look like they might even go higher. Inventory is low and prices are high relative to incomes. So the prices of commodities are also rising, which means that's more expensive to build houses, which puts upward pressure on prices. And finding an affordable starter home in the price range below about $250,000 is really challenging. So you also have to remember with housing that it's very local. We give you economic statistics that are based on national averages, but your local market could be entirely different. So it really depends where you live. However, for anyone out there looking for a brilliant business idea, figure out a way to build $150,000 houses in large cities profitably, and you will have a gold mine.
That is the truth.
Demand is really through the roof, and there just isn't any inventory. So that's kind of what's going on in the economic world. Outside of that, everything else looks pretty good.
Yeah, one of the misses on the economic indicators was in the transportation. In the durable goods in general did pretty well, but durable goods, including transports, were off a little bit. But when you take that out of there, they were up way more than expected. The problem with transportation, which is mostly airplanes, is that when you place an order for an airplane, you don't buy a 727 this month and then another one next month. You place an order for 10, 12, 20, whatever airplanes, and that order's huge, and then you don't place any orders for another year or 15 months or whatever.
The reason I didn't even bring that up is because the report was actually pretty good, but the news was touting it as a huge miss, and
it
wasn't.
It wasn't. No. Next week, we have a plethora of financial statistics coming out that are going to make a lot of difference, and that week is going to culminate, much to my surprise, on Friday, the 1st of June, when they are going to release the jobs report, even though they haven't had enough time to put it together accurately.
Oh,
but that's
great.
Okay, because they're not accurate any month, so they're going to make it up this Friday. I didn't think they'd do it. I thought they'd wait a week, but I was wrong. The BLS is reporting it will be in, so watch for that. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And this Memorial Day weekend, we have a non-Memorial Day trivia question, but it does have to do with the market. We've been talking about the volatility that was lacking last year, came back with a vengeance this year, and now, strangely enough, seems to be smoothing out. So over the past 3 weeks, there has not been one day where the S&P 500 index moved 1% up or down, either direction, for three solid weeks. Now, in the 12 weeks before that, it was doing it a lot. What percentage of trading days in the previous 12 weeks did the S&P 500 index move 1% either up or down? It's a pretty high number, and I'll take it within 5% to tell you that it was pretty significant. What we lacked for a year or so in volatility, we sort of got back. It made a lot of people remember that the market doesn't move in just one direction. But I have a couple things I want to do just because it's Memorial Day weekend. Those of us in the poppy generation, do you know who we are? That means you were around and aware of things prior to 1971 because Memorial Day, which was Decoration Day, was a day when everybody passed out poppies to everyone and they put them in their shirts and they had the cigar cleaner type things that you could wrap around. So well, it was referred to it as Poppy Day. The reason for that, I heard over the weekend, was that back in the Civil War era, when they were wanting to place flowers on the deaths, the graves and the death and so on, the only thing that would grow in that bad land was poppies. Apparently, they're very hardy. So that became very popular. Well, then in 1971, the date for Memorial Day or Decoration Day was kind of a floating target, and for a while it was the last day in May and so on, but it was codified into Memorial Day being this particular Monday back in 71. So during that week, we looked back to say, what's been the average performance in the market for that particular week, which is the four-day week? Well, it has been positive, strangely enough, a little over 0.5%. The usual move is 0.54% up with positive returns 62% of the time, 5 of 8. So I'm going to predict that we don't break that trend over the next week and see exactly what happens.
All right.
I think the general direction, as we said last week, is up. And I don't see any reason in the absence of some major problem that it would break that trend right now.
Well, it's been a good quarter so far. We are up, let's see, the NASDAQ's up 5.2, the S&P's up 3%, so most of that coming this month.
Okay.
Last month was kind of a flat month, but yeah, this month and this quarter have been pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing about this particular time, I've carried this around with me for a long time. A lot of you know who Trey Gowdy is, right? And if you're like me, you love Trey Gowdy. He is just the best. When he talks, I listen. I've heard a lot of people say, I've been in the room many times when Trey Gowdy was in there, and he was the smartest man in the room. Now, if anybody ever says that about me, I'll go to my grave happy. But they're right about him. So he was asked a silly question by a reporter recently from CNN about the military. And here's his response. I think you'll like it as much as I do. Nobody has a right to serve in the military. Nobody. What makes people think the military is an equal opportunity employer? Very far from it. The military uses prejudice regularly and consistently to deny citizens from joining for being too old or too young, too fat or too skinny, too tall or too short. Citizens are denied for having flat feet or for missing or additional fingers. Poor eyesight will disqualify you, as well as bad teeth. Malnourished, drug addiction, bad luck, criminal history, low IQ, anxiety, phobias, hearing damage, six arms, hear voices in your head, self-identify as a unicorn, need a special access ramp for your wheelchair, can't run the required course in the required time, can't do the required number of push-ups, not really a morning person and refuse to get out of bed before noon, all can be reasons for denial. The military has one job, war. Anything else is a distraction and a liability. Did someone just scream, that isn't fair? War is very unfair. There are no exceptions made for being special or challenged or socially wonderful. You change yourself to meet military standards, not the other way around. I say again, you don't change the military. You must change yourself. The military doesn't need to accommodate anyone with special issues. The military needs to win wars. If any of your personal issues are a liability that detracts from readiness or lethality, thank you for applying, and good luck in future endeavors. Who's next in line? Isn't that wonderful?
Pretty good.
When, like I say, when he talks, I listen. And as Rush would always say, the purpose of the military is twofold: to kill people and break things. That's it.
About right.
And they do it well.
No doubt.
All right. What's up?
I talked a little bit about housing earlier, and I saw recently that home values are rising at the fastest pace that we've seen in 12 years. Median home values rose 8.7% over the past year to $215,600, according to the April Zillow Real Estate Market Report. And, yeah, that hasn't happened since June of 2006. So we are definitely in a appreciating market in terms of home values.
Great news. I appreciate the market.
Yeah, great news if you're a homeowner. Not so great if you're thinking about getting in sometime in the future. I believe Angela mentioned it earlier. If you are thinking about it, now might be the time to do it. Take advantage of it while you can. And also, another bit of good news locally, Jacksonville is actually leading the state in growth, according to the Census Bureau.
Wow.
Yeah. The city added 11,000 residents in 2016, more than any other city. And it is also has added more people than any other city in Florida since 2010. It's grown by 68,000 residents.
Who let our secret out?
I know, right? I wish you guys would stop talking about how great it is here.
No kidding. The traffic's getting worse every day.
No doubt. But yeah, good news. We are definitely being discovered, it seems like.
Good news, unless you have to drive.
Yeah.
Oh, it is good news. Economically, you wouldn't want it any other way. I'm very pleased about that. All right, speaking of houses and economies and things like that, and by the way, lines are open, 222-TALK. The trivia question is out there. What percentage of days have we seen in the previous 12 weeks prior to the last three that were big moves in the market, meaning plus or minus 1%? All right, very unnoticed on Thursday, very underreported because there's so much going on. President Trump signed not a repeal, but a rollback of Dodd-Frank. Now, those of you who have listened to me for a long time know that I am no fan of Dodd-Frank, and I was no fan of its predecessor, Sarbanes-Oxley. These were knee-jerk reactions. Remember how I will say that Congress, when they perceive a problem or when someone complains of a problem, they have this undeniable need to, quote, do something.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing they could do would be to go on vacation for a month and then let it settle down and see what people were talking about when they came back. But no, you've also heard me say that if I had my druthers in this life, any people who put their name on a law, such as Dodd and Frank and Sarbanes and Oxley, the second they were all out of the Congress, that law would automatically be sunsetted, meaning it would be invalidated, rolled back, canceled, whatever, and should be resubmitted to Congress to see if today Congress would still pass the same thing they passed back when there was this crisis where they had to do something. I promise you, with Dodd-Frank, had they had a chance when Dodd and Frank left Congress, that thing would have been rolled back so fast. All it was meant to prevent 2007, 2008, 2009 from happening again by tying the hands of the smaller banks. It was a perpetual motion machine for large banks. Guess who was supporting it? Could it be the really big banks? Yes. Credit unions suffered. Regional banks suffered. And a lot of it had to do with limitations on the size of the bank, where these things kicked in. So if the little banks were afraid to grow, for one thing, and they couldn't merge, and here's the upshot of the whole thing. You couldn't make loans anymore if you were a smaller banker or a smaller credit union person or something like that. Speaking of credit unions, right after the break, I'm going to tell you my credit union story this week, and you do want to stick around for that, trust me. But anyway, very quietly, it has been supported. The repeal or rollback has been supported by a handful of right-thinking people in Congress, and they've sort of quietly passed it, as the House does, And for all the time I spend ranting and raving about the House, they actually do pass a lot of stuff that doesn't get anywhere because the Senate won't pass it. This one snuck through, and on Thursday, Trump rolled it back a little bit. Now, there's going to be a redoubled effort to make that into a full-fledged repeal, and I will support that completely. But what you're going to see now is a little more strength in local credit unions and local banks. You'll see some more mergers going on in the smaller banks. You'll see it easier to get credit if you're a small business person. If you remember when a couple weeks ago when Craig was on, we were talking about financing for small business. The rules are going to loosen up a little bit, which is really good for the entrepreneurs of the world. So keep an eye on this one. And I'll try to find some stories along the way and tell you if it's actually working as planned. All right, got to take a little break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And it is a beautiful Saturday on this Memorial Day weekend. We are live in the studio. Give us a call, 222-TALK. We'll talk about whatever you would like to, whether it's a military thing or a money thing or any other comments on the passing scene. This segment sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance, because things are growing now like crazy. You probably all noticed that over the last week when we got rain, sun, rain. And I'll tell you where he is right now, and it's going to be making my place look better between leaving this morning and coming back. And boy, does it need it. Give Troy a call, 662-9794. Trivia question, again brought to you by First Coast Alarm. Volatility has been subdued again for the past 3 weeks, and we have had no days with a 1% change in the S&P. The 3 months before that, however, it was kind of wild, and I want to know what percentage of those days in the preceding 12 weeks the market changed at least 1%. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Chuck. Good. How are you?
Okay. Hey, what's up? Did you all catch on Fox News website the other day that that Frank once said that Nancy Pelosi is so unpopular that the Democrats have very little chance of taking the House?
I saw that on Breitbart this morning, mm-hmm. actually.
Yeah, and I have to agree. I've been watching the trend lines, and it looks pretty good for the Republicans, frankly, to almost no fault of their own.
Yeah, I know. on the market, you know, like you all were saying in the first few minutes, it was like I couldn't figure out that the market actually was doing better. But then when I looked at some of the FANG charts this morning, Netflix is breaking out. Amazon is very close to an all-time high. Apple looks like it's ready to break out to go to the $1 trillion mark.
It sure does. I predicted that.
All these charts look good.
Yeah, Microsoft hit an all-time high this week as well.
Speaking of which, since you brought it up, I have a little tidbit about Netflix. This past Wednesday marked 16 years that Netflix has been a public company. Had you put $1,000 into Netflix 16 years ago Wednesday, you would currently have $300,000. How's that for growth?
Wow, that's incredible.
You know, they're worth more than Disney.
Yeah, bigger.
And what was the other one? It was Disney and something, another entertainment outfit. I can't remember.
Cox or something like that. I can't remember.
What it tells me is people are really loving the idea of getting their entertainment without leaving the house.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's absolutely brilliant what this guy's been doing. And, man, is he getting rewarded for it. But you're right. The FANGs are looking good again. They kind of go in and out of favor, but right now they're hot. Market just generally to me looks very strong.
Hey, you look at the charts and they've been consolidating the last 3 or 4 weeks since they reported earnings.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's starting to come again. Now, the Worldwide Developers Conference for Apple especially is being held around the 12th of June, and there's going to be some new things coming out, and I'll make a prediction. everybody will come out and say, oh, it was very unimpressive, I'm totally underwhelmed, and then the world will get a chance at it, and they're going to love it, and then the stock will go up. Because the public always likes it a lot more than the critics.
Is Apple, is the $1 trillion market cap mark, is that at 193?
I don't know exactly.
I didn't look at that either. I saw a recent price target on it, though, was 212, but I think the trillion mark is before that.
Yeah. But I did predict a couple weeks ago that we're going to see it, and we're going to see it very soon. I actually kind of thought we'd see it by now, but I think it's coming really quickly. And, you know, that's just sort of a number, but it's really kind of significant in the history of the market. It hasn't been done. So I think Apple will be the first one to do it. And quite frankly, when you have a product line like that that makes people want to go out and spend way too much money on something cool and replace it even though it isn't broken, you've done something right.
No, it's not even that they want it. They feel like they need it.
Yeah, exactly. What can you say? Steve Jobs tapped into human nature and modified it to fit his goal. Brilliant. Can't call it anything else. So what are you thinking? You buying or holding or what?
Well, I'm more an active trader, but I go in and out of it. And sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. So it's hard sometimes, but I made some money on Netflix this week. I saw it breaking out, and
good.
That was very encouraging.
Nice. Well, hopefully you're right more than you're wrong.
Sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong, but you're 100% human, and that's all it means. Nobody knows for sure, but I think you're right. If you look at the indicators and you look at the charts, it may not be the sole way that people should invest for the long run, but if you're doing some trading, trying to make some money, you're doing exactly right. It's not our normal business, but it's something that we encourage for people to do on their own with some play money. Don't put your whole 401k into that theory, though.
Oh, no, not at all. Definitely very conservative there, actually. Actually, I've been too conservative in my 401k for too long because I just was in disbelief that the bull market could continue this long because it never has done that before.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a very common problem. I've been guilty in the past, long before I got into this business. I started letting my emotions control what I did, and I learned way back when Clinton was elected, the market doesn't give a rip what you think.
No, it certainly doesn't.
Yeah.
And so, and the other thing is, if you look at just the history of the United States, recessions are getting further and further apart, mm-hmm. and a lot of that is attributed to the to monetary policy and what the Fed does, easing in and out of them, and therefore it's I'm not going to say we can predict them, but they can manage them better, and therefore the effects are not as great, and they're further and further apart, and that's a pretty clear when I had an economist show me last I think December the chart of recessions over time, and it's a very, very clear pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any opinion on the Vanguard Inflation Protected Bond Fund, which is what I'm in my 401k?
I own a lot of it.
You own the Vanguard, or do you own
TIPS? No, but same thing. Yeah. I own it in the iShare rather than Vanguard. But I'm a big fan of inflation protected bonds right now. I believe that they're not going to be able to hide inflation much longer. We all know it's happening. We all know it's escalating. It's starting to show up in the numbers. But now as wages start to rise, which I think you're going to see a pattern of even stronger than the one for the last year, it's going to cause increases in inflation. And if you're going to hold any bonds, I think you got a better chance to make money in inflation-protected bonds than you do in mid or long. And, of course, shorts aren't going to yield you very much. So, yeah, I'm a big fan. I'd probably leave it right where it is or add on.
Yeah, I may add some more to it. I was thinking about doing that.
You read more, too, about people coming around to my way of thinking. Now, I can't say it's been a brilliant move the last 5 years.
I was going to say, we should almost put an asterisk.
I see Adam looking at me. He's been saying this for so long, and I have, and I'll admit it to you, but I don't change my mind. And they're starting. If you look at the payout, if you go to the iShares webpage and put in TIP for the long-term tips and then go down on the left side, you'll see the distribution chart over the past year, and you can see that it is accelerating big time.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So what was paying zero for 5 months in a row is now paying anywhere from a penny to 50 cents every single month without skipping one lately. I skipped one, I guess, out of the last six. But if you look at that, you'll see the trend line I'm going on. And, yes, I do like it. And I do not like long-term bonds right now, obviously, because interest rates are rising, and they'll be falling even further.
Yeah, they had a good week.
They did, but that was because the yield curve flattened out a little bit. So got to keep an eye on the trends if you're going to know how to play the bond half of your portfolio. And I think it's good to have one. I really do, especially for older people. How old are you anyway?
55.
Okay, that puts you right in the normal range for investors balancing portfolios with stocks and bonds. Did you want to take a shot at the trivia question before we need to run?
Yeah, tell me it one more time.
Okay, what percentage of days over the 12 weeks prior to the last three, did the market move at least 1% up or down? And it's with plus or minus 5%.
I'll say 15.
Too low, believe it or not. We've had zero in 3 weeks, but that's too low. Good guess. We appreciate it. Music's playing. Got to run. You have yourself a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Finally, somebody agrees with me.
Only took 5 years.
Adam's been pushing back a little bit over the past, whatever. Anyway, we'll talk more about that when we get back. Got to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
Lines are open. 222-TALK. Give us a call. I mentioned a little bit ago that I had a problem arise this past week, a week ago, whatever. I was home when the phone rang, and it appeared to be from my credit union. So I took the call, which is lady, nice lady at the end of the line says, we just wanted to verify this large check that you wrote on your home equity credit line. And I said, the what? The large check you wrote. I've had that credit line since 2012. I've never written a check on it. I've paid it down, but I haven't paid it up. You mean you didn't write a check? No, I didn't. How much was it for? $435,000. And I said, no, wasn't me. Charge it somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, here's what happened, apparently. Someone presented a check in my name to Bank of America. It was made out to a construction company. And just as an aside, I did look up the name of that construction company. It was a Florida company. Went out of business in 1976. And the nice people at the Bank of America called Bistar and said, I've been presented this very large check. Is something wrong? It is not the normal spending pattern that we see from anybody. Bistar says, well, certainly not the normal spending pattern we see from Mr. Vanway. So been working with them ever since. And having met with them, I asked to get a copy of the check. And the check is number 1001. I'm giving you all the details because it's all closed up now and nothing can happen. So I took in with me my check number 1001, which remains to this day in the condition that I got it, totally blank. So I set it down in front of the copy of the other check, and sure enough, the account number was right. Sure enough, the routing number was right. My name, however, was misspelled, which is my first clue. It did not say home equity line of credit or anything like that on it, and it was printed by a different company than the one that the credit union uses. So I said, basically, we got to get this closed and restore it into a new one, and you guys can go chase them and all that. And they've been wonderful, and they're doing that. But we stood there or sat there for a little bit and looked at it. Someone had obviously practiced my signature. It was not perfect. But if you didn't know me very well and you looked at it and you'd seen a couple letters come out or something like that, you'd probably think, yeah, that looks like his signature. So Where they got it, how they got it, and how they practiced, I don't know. But interestingly, this most clever crook in the make pay it to line wrote the construction company's name, he printed it. I never print. Hit a back slant on it. I never write in a back slant. And it appeared to me that he was left-handed. Not really a good way to copy somebody's way of doing things. So I got to figure it's someone who had access to account numbers and so on, but didn't have access to actual checks that I had written, which makes sense since I'd never written a check on that account. So I've been thinking about it a lot ever since and whether or not I should share it. And my wife and I talked about it and said, yeah, I think everybody ought to know. It can even happen to me. It can certainly happen to you. What's the bottom line on all this stuff? That you should always trust no one, as we do, but there's a better bottom line. Along the way in solving this problem for me, the credit union said, we can put a security code on all of your accounts where nothing can ever happen unless you give them the security word, which I, of course, did. If I can do it, you can do it. Remember all the times we've talked about getting the PIN number for IRS? It's free. It costs you nothing. If you live in Florida or Georgia or Washington, D.C., you're automatically qualified to get one. Get the security PIN. Adam and I have had way too much experience with people who filed their taxes only to find out that their refund had already been sent to someone who wasn't them. This is the same thing for your bank accounts. If you keep credit lines or anything like that, you might want to discuss with your bank or your credit union putting a security code on it. I did. Had I known about it before, I would have done it sooner. But they were wonderful. They have done absolutely everything correctly. I hope this guy gets hung up and thrown in jail. I have no idea if he will or not, and I doubt if I'll ever find out if it happens. But just know it can happen to you. They're out there. And they're busy, busy, busy trying to fleece you.
Really makes you wonder if he had written the check for a much smaller amount, if he would have just gotten away with it.
Yeah.
20
so
grand.
If you're the
like
kind
that.
Of person who balances his checkbook at the end of every month, as I have always done, good. Keep doing it. If you're not, start.
Well, I don't balance my checkbook per se, but
check
I go through all my transactions.
Every
always.
Credit card transaction, every check transaction, everything. Check them. Nobody will do it better than you do because you know what
Very
happened.
True.
That's
Very
it.
True.
So that's what happened to me, and it'll all be better soon. I can't thank the credit union enough, which is why we've always been advocates of the credit unions. They're small, they're local, and they really care about you.
So this is... We also have another story. This one's really interesting. It's about kind of the opposite of what Steve just talked about. This is about Mike Meru. You might have seen the story. It was in the Wall Street Journal and on Market Watch, I believe, on Friday. Friday. And Mike is a 37-year-old orthodontist, and he took on some student debt to get that degree in orthodontia. And that student debt has grown substantially since he took it on. He now has $1,060,945.42 in student loans.
Oh, wait a minute. That was yesterday.
That was. So since then, it has grown by about $130 because that's what happens every day to his student loans because he is making payments of just under $1,600 a month based on his income. He's on the income-based repayment program. And that doesn't cover the interest by about $130 per day. So In 20 years, his loan balance is projected to be $2 million. Mm. And what happens then? Well, the debt is going to be forgiven. Lucky mm-hmm. Mike, right?
Maybe
Wait
not.
A second. What happens when the debt is forgiven is that entire balance is then charged to you as income for the year, which Mike makes about $225,000, a nice income, but he is going to owe taxes on $2,225,000 in the year that the debt is discharged.
And you know what that'll do to his bracket?
It's going to shoot him into the highest tax bracket.
Yep.
And the tax burden on that is estimated to be somewhere around $700,000 in that year. So I went and did a little calculation. I assumed he still had 25 years left on his loan, which I don't think he does. It's less than that. But If he had 25 years left on his loan, he would have to start saving about $1,500 a month right now and grow that at about 3% in order to have $700,000 to pay
just for the
that
taxes.
Loan. Yes. Yeah, just for the taxes. So how did that happen, you wonder? Well, Mike went...
Thanks, Obama.
He actually graduated debt-free from Brigham Young University for undergrad and decided to go to graduate school at the University of Southern California, which is one of the most expensive private colleges in the country. And his projected loans were going to be somewhere between $400,000 and $450,000. Well, a couple of things happened.
That would have scared a normal person.
Yeah. So a couple of things happened. The interest rate went up during the time he was in college by about 2%. So that projection went higher based on that. And at the end of his education, he actually had to go and do a 3-year fellowship or apprenticeship, something like that. And he took a forbearance, which meant he wasn't paying on those loans. So they were just gathering interest for those 3 years. So by the time he graduated, he had somewhere in the neighborhood of $700,000. Then he got on this income-based repayment program. And now it's ballooned to $1 million. Well, 5 years ago, there was only 14 people in the U.S. that owed over $1 million on student loans. Now there's 101 people. And my guess is you're going to see that number increase dramatically in the coming years.
You know, this, when I say thanks, Obama, I'm only being a little bit facetious since he took over the entire student loan business and the rates are now way higher than they used to be. The whole thing is just a complete mess. And if you think that we're all going to get behind the government and forgive all that student loan debt, you got a lot to consider out there. I would not advocate it. What I'd like is better education up front. All right, for the 12 weeks prior to the last three, 45% of trading days were moves of 1% up or down, which is an astronomical amount of volatility. I contend there's a little more volatility coming back, but I don't think you're going to see it like that anymore. Enjoy this long weekend. Remember what it's about. We will see you same time next week. This is the Benway Financial Hour.